Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Angela Davis. You know, the heartbreak of losing someone can be overwhelming at the best of times. And during the pandemic, the death of a loved one was especially intense. In the early months of the pandemic, many people were separated from relatives, even at the time of death. Funerals were delayed or rushed. And the traditional rituals of mourning were often suspended. But we know that these rituals and these traditions are important for celebrating and honoring a life. Funerals are for the living. Mental health experts say it's too soon to tell, but the pandemic may be prolonging emotions of grief for some people. They're finding it harder to rebuild their lives. Today, I'm joined by a pastor, a rabbi, and a grief educator, and we'll talk about remembering loved ones who died during the pandemic and whether the pandemic has changed how we will mourn in the future. And of course, the phone lines are open, and we want to hear from you. Have you lost someone you loved? What has grieving been like for you? How have funerals or other mourning rituals changed? And what have you found to be helpful? Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And now let me bring in my guests. The Reverend Ron Bell is senior pastor of Camp 4 Memorial United Methodist Church in St. Paul. He's also a board member of the Minnesota Coalition for Death Education and Support. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. It's so good to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Ted Bowman is an educator and consultant who specializes in grief, loss, and transition, and he joins us from St. Paul. Welcome, Ted.
It's good to be with you. I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman is senior rabbi at Temple Israel in Minneapolis. Welcome, Marcia.
Thank you so much. Very important conversation.
So a question for each of you. Same question for each of you. I'll start with you, Marcia. But did the pandemic affect or impact how you approach grief?
I think that the pandemic was a complicated situation. First of all, just the number of deaths that we were dealing with in the first few months. So many people died from COVID with many underlying situations and health issues, but it brought on a variety of intense and traumatic deaths. And so the community overall was in shock. Not being able to gather together in person, not being able to mourn the way that we are so used to with people coming together, people flying in. In some cases, I was the only person at the gravesite because no family was able to fly in for the funeral. It was all virtual. Now, first of all, it's important to note that Judaism does not let us put off a funeral. So it had to happen within 48 to 72 hours. And that did sustain us in many ways because people were able to at least know that the process, the rituals were there in a very different way, but the rituals still sustained us. And then I just want to say that not being with their loved ones at the end was difficult.
Sure.
I remember learning and saying to my own children, not knowing whether I would contract the COVID virus, if I die, I do not want you to come to my bedside, you're not going to be able to, or to the graveside, because I don't want you to put yourself at risk. It's the last thing I want you to risk anything. That would not be the love that I have for you as a parent. And it is not being in any way disrespectful or not honoring me to not show up. Actually, don't show up. That's what I want.
You know, and that's probably something many grandparents and parents had a conversation like that with their children because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Ron, at your church, I mean, you know, how did the pandemic affect how you approach grief?
Sure. In the traditional Black church, funerals are a celebration. In fact, we call it a celebration of life. There's choirs, the community gathers, there's usually a repast. It's an experience. And when COVID hit, all that shut down. We were no longer able to gather in our churches. We only used the funeral home. Only a few people could go and be a part of that experience. Most of the people who passed, at least in the first months, were no longer full body funerals. They were cremations. And so because the process of grieving changed, how we approach and receive that grief also changed. And it was difficult. It was difficult. We began to do a lot more around story and just engaging family in conversations around their loved one because we couldn't visit with them. We couldn't be with them in person. They couldn't see them. We couldn't have that celebratory experience as a community. And so story became really important as a part of our practice of grieving in the first months of the pandemic.
And so these stories, the exchanging of stories, you know, honoring, celebrating a life, this was done remotely or on Zoom, you know, so people weren't getting together.
Sure.
To share these stories.
Sure.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted?
Yes. Someone described the pandemic and its impact on bereavement and grief as normal grief with the volume turned up. And it was a high volume. And part of what I was hearing the rabbi and the minister say is that it also created a time of ambiguity, which exacerbated our grief. And what I mean by ambiguity is that we're a culture of people who desire clarity and want things to go as they should. And so that has to do with funerals. That has to do with the visitation of the dying in nursing homes or whatever setting. And all of those, as each of you have said, was truncated, was not possible. And so people were dealing with a lot of uncertainty, not only about the pandemic, but also how to do these things, and especially to have these memorials and funerals. Part of what I have advocated over the years, even before the pandemic, is that in many cases we need to consider to have two or more funerals, two or more memorials, for a variety of reasons. And especially during this pandemic, if the in-person event was not feasible, to gather in safe small groups, as Ron was even saying, with one or two, light a candle, have a photo of the person who's died, and share those stories. And to do that in other kind of groupings until it's possible to gather as a community. My advocacy for that, even earlier, I remember a friend died, his father died in Nebraska years ago, and he went home to bury his father. Well, my friend had lived here for 40 years. And so his community was here. And so I asked him to bring back some of the programs from the Nebraska event, gather in our home, bring a photo of his dad, and share stories of his dad so that he also could have his memorial here in his home place. So it was those kinds of adjustments that help us with ambiguity.
And Ron, are now funerals, are people gathering together? Are you back to, you know, being able to have all the family members, extended family, neighborhood, community in the church?
You know what's interesting, Chris, is that I think that COVID has fundamentally changed the DNA of how we do celebrations of life and funerals. When we first began, many of the funerals were cremations. And traditionally, historically, in the Black church, cremations are frowned upon. They're seen as the cheaper way out. And so you expect the full body, full funeral, full thing. But what I'm noticing now, after 18 months of this, or almost 22 months of COVID, that's become the norm. And so we're seeing more and more cremations, more and more memorials, less people, more stories, more, you know, words sent in, flowers sent in, videos sent in, but less physical participation. I think that might track going forward.
And Marcia, do you see changes that came about during the pandemic, dealing with grief and funerals, traditions, changes that might continue? And maybe this is a bad analogy, but I'm thinking, you know, we started working from home and we know we're going to continue to work from home, at least to some extent. I mean, we made a fundamental shift there. What about grief?
So in many ways, we in the Jewish tradition come back a year later for what's called an unveiling. And we go to the gravesite and we unveil the stone. And there's a whole ritual around it. What people have done is made those bigger and larger so that we're outside as far as risk mitigation, it's safer, and people tell stories in a way that we haven't had unveilings. Usually we're just the family coming together. Now it's more friends coming together, going around and telling stories and crying, and they're just beautiful, beautiful moments. So I've had a lot of those where the original funeral was all remote. The family might have gone to the gravesite at the time of burial when it was safe to do so. But now, a year later, there's a coming together of community. And I wonder if that's going to track in a similar way in the future. I also think, if I could be
sure,
that people have said that because it was only 10 people at the grave for much of COVID, because that was the safety measure, at least in the Jewish community. And people loved that. People loved the true kind of mourners coming together at the gravesite rather than the whole community gathering after we had a service in the sanctuary, coming back to the cemetery and having a larger group. They said it was just everybody was in the same place, and people found that to be truly beautiful and sustaining and actually more healing in this time of COVID than having a larger group, some of whom were talking and trying to distract the mourners. The mourners could then focus and know everybody was in the same mood.
Well, let's go to the phones. And first, let's go to Galen in Minneapolis. Galen?
Yes.
And yes, we can hear you fine. What is
Thank you. I postponed a lot just for this show. I don't want to take much time, but as it relates to the pandemic, I'm non-denominational and I'm agnostic. However, I do want to say that I've learned how important rituals are. And then with having prefaced what I had said, it doesn't mean that I don't have respect for them. And and I found that out very early because everything happened so quick after the death of my mother and there was no ritual. And I realized how important they were. And then came the pandemic. And I'm so surprised how debilitating it was for me. And I consider myself a pretty strong person, even though I've got a small amount of family. My brother lives in Oxford, England. But I guess that's what I would contribute is that, one, even though I'm not religious per se, how much I respect, you know, last rites or what have you, and then how much the pandemic did put a big weight, a big brick on everything. And I'm only now, after 3 years, starting to come out of it. So thank you for your show. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you very much for calling. I really appreciate it. And Ted, what is your reaction to, you know, what she felt, what she's you know, it's taken time for her to deal with her grief?
Yes, you know, the three of us, as well as Gail, are talking about the importance of these rites of passage. Historians call it a threshold, a thin place where we move from one world to the other, and we need to honor those kind of threshold moments. and to find ways and to do that creatively. As I said earlier, it can be done in small groups, but also we can take advantage of this technology. My own wife died in July of 2020, suddenly of a heart attack, cardiac arrest.
I'm sorry to hear that. We went ahead
and had a Zoom funeral soon after. And here's the advantage. There were over 300 computers at her funeral, meaning that people who would not have been able to come in person, people at long distance who have known us over our 41 years of marriage, were able to attend and be part of that. And part of what we did, in addition to that kind of memorial, but then related to what Gail was saying, was that we urged people to have a second hour with us, still on Zoom, in which six or seven friends of Marge could share their stories, because that's what happens often at the visitation. That's what often happens as people are gathering around these threshold events. And people were glad not only to have the memorial event, but also to hear the six or seven stories from various parts of my wife's life. So there's lots of creativity that we can do if we're willing to be flexible at times like this pandemic.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Niles. Is it Niles in St. Paul? Niles, did I pronounce your name right?
That works. This is Niels. Yeah.
Niels, I apologize.
You don't have to worry about that. Yeah, so I was a hospice nurse through the pandemic from the get-go, and one thing I just noticed as a caregiver was just suddenly we were all not hugging anymore. There was no more hand-holding. And as a nurse, you know, you go in dressed like a firefighter going into a fire, and the lack of the presence of the family was just heartbreaking, you know. We would just go to greetings from the windows, and towards the end of life, I was in the room several times with deaths where we would just try and create an environment with FaceTiming on the phone and holding it up. But, you know, you're the only one in there, and you're wearing a face shield and a mask, and you're there with a FaceTime phone trying to create an environment. And you can just hear the family member on the phone who normally would have sat next to the person holding the hand and giving reassuring. It was just a really extreme experience, I felt, for everyone involved. And, you know, trying to show pictures of family members that would be around the room still and all that. But I think there's still lingering wounds out there in all of us that were involved in that and still are involved in trying to manage a pandemic.
And it must have been hard on you. I mean, obviously hard on the family, but also hard on you.
Yeah. No, it was heartbreaking. It was really, really very difficult. You know, you'd come home and you know, I'm a healing touch practitioner. I do a lot of meditation. Speaking of spirituality, I have ways to try to cope with this, being a nurse through decades, also through the AIDS epidemic. So I've seen a lot of loss and found ways to you know, as a caregiver to move on beyond it, and that's really important, I think, for nurses. And kudos to all the nurses, aides, and everyone who go in there dedicated to the work and to be that person who will be present in the situation, putting their lives at risk, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm sure the family members are, you know, so appreciative of what you did. Ron?
Yeah. Again, I want to say thank you to Niels for the work that you're doing. You know, one of the things I think we miss, Chris, is that grief is an extension of love. It's what love looks like after loss, right? It's connected.
Yeah.
And so because it's so connected, there's so many emotions that it carries. There's such a heaviness that it becomes important to do those practices, to find those practices, those rituals that keep us connected. And so you heard both callers talk about just finding your own unique practices, whether it's stories. I remember after my father passed, you know, we would go to his favorite restaurant and have a meal and order the food that we know he loved. Right. Because that was our practice of honoring him through our own grief.
So that's just funny. We did the same thing. We did the exact same thing. Oh, yeah. Yes.
but they just become critical for us to continue to engage. It's work because grief doesn't go away.
No.
It doesn't disappear. We just find different ways of managing and accepting and living and working through it. Yeah.
And Marcia, I just want to ask you about what Niels was talking about and describing.
So first of all, the people on the front line, hospice workers, doctors, nurses, people who were in the healthcare world, and those at the end of life, it's sacred work, and sacred work is hard. And I hope that Niels feels that support and love from so many people who don't even know him, who don't even know the situations, but know the process. And I think the best way for us to recognize is to also talk to each other, those of us who are with people who are dying, and to see it as a process that is important. And I love the idea of ritual, because for me, anthropologically, they say that ritual orders chaos. And when we lose a loved one, our world feels chaotic. And so ritual helps us order it and hold us and contain us in all the different emotions of grief. And grief itself is a complicated reality, because I often like to describe it similar to a telephone cable, those old telephone cables, mm-hmm. You know, they're encased in this gray outer casing, and then you split it open and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of smaller, different colored wires that connect people. And that's grief. Grief is sadness and frustration and depression, depressive feelings, and also joy and laughter. And it's all wrapped up into one reality that is something to work through. And you can't go over it. You can't go around it. You got to go through it, because grief will wait for you. It will be there in 10 years as fresh as it is if you don't deal with it. And it opens up our heart. What is it? I think it's a beautiful sentiment that we need to break our hearts to open them. And that's what grief does. It breaks our hearts in order to be more compassionate to others, to be more understanding. Grief is an amazing teacher, and it's so difficult because we all are going to lose somebody at some point.
And Ted, this idea that grief is a complicated reality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is very complex. And related to both what Marcia and Ron were saying, we've been focusing on the differences that occurred during the pandemic, but both of them are also emphasizing that the grieving continues, even if it were a typical or normal grieving. Anna Quinlan had a lovely phrase years ago that 10 years after the event, 25 years after the event, you may experience the continual presence of an absence. And so that's the continuing grief. And what's happened even in the pandemic is that we not only are grieving these deaths of the moment, but they often are reminding us of previous losses in our lives. And so that adds to the complication that we're not just dealing with one thing at one time, but it reminds us of a brother's death or a grandfather's death or a teacher's death at a previous time. And so the grieving continues, and that doesn't mean we have to be preoccupied with our grief, but rather to know that there will be these triggers, there will be these ambushes, there will be these flashbacks and memories, and we need to take a breath and say, oh, another grief. Who am I remembering now? What's going on with me in terms of my grief? And related to what the rabbi was saying is, who then can be there for me, with whom I can offload, with whom I can talk, who's willing to hear the story of my continuing remembering and the stories that I have inside me?
Yeah, and I lost my mother in June, 94 years old, and I was putting some dishes she had given me away, and I was putting them into the dishwasher and cracked up because, as she had explained to me, she had never, ever put any dishes in the dishwasher. And so I texted my sister saying this story. And my sister said, I had the exact same experience. Book club was over. I served them on the same dishes. And she goes, you know, I stood at the dishwasher and I said, sorry, Mom. I'm just putting them in the dishwasher. So, yes, yeah. You do.
Oh,
they
that's
do.
Wonderful.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Someone said it's the intersection of past, present, and future stories. When when you have those kind of moments. Oh my gosh, it's past, present, and future.
Yes, it is. So let's go. Okay, before we go to news, let's go to Linda. And Linda in Apple Valley. Linda?
Hello?
Hello, Linda?
Yes. I'm here.
Well, what is your observation or story?
Well, my story, my husband and I, my husband is Black and Native American, and I'm Asian. We're Jewish. And his twin sister died November 30th last year of COVID, and we didn't have the money to bury her, let alone be able to find a burial plot, so we had her cremated. And that whole process of making sure that she's cremated, that that her ashes were shipped up here to the correct place, and buying urns, the small urns for people who wanted some of her ashes, and our big urn, it made the grieving process very difficult for us.
I'm sorry to hear that. Marcia?
Yes, it sounds very painful, and I'm so sorry. I think that the process, you know, people weren't even able to go to funeral homes at some point, and they did everything online. And that process of not being able to be in person through that period of making the arrangements was very painful. And I think that what is left over a lot of times is I've heard people talk about a lot of guilt. Now, I think guilt is a part of mourning always. And for some reason, I've really come to honor guilt, not when it becomes the major reaction or, mm-hmm. or life altering, but that there's always guilt. Even when people are next to the person 24/7, there's still guilt because death is something we can't change and is permanent. And so it is so difficult. But I just want to say that there's also the way that the soul continues, at least from my belief, that the soul continues to live. The body, our gateway to the soul is gone, but the soul isn't. And just to open your mind and your heart to her soul in your life and to those moments where putting the dishes in the dishwasher might have been your mother kind of knocking on the door and saying, don't worry, I still am here in some metaphysical way.
And Ron, This expression that Marcia, you know, the soul still lives even though the body is gone.
Sure, sure. Well, and I think that's so critical because I compare grief to an elephant. It's the elephant in the room. And sometimes it's the trunk of the elephant where it's large, it's clumsy, you stumble over it, you spend your day tripping into it. Sometimes it's the tail of the elephant where you can simply just fold it up, do your practices, your rituals, and just go about your day. Sometimes it's the ear of the elephant where it's heavy and just kind of lays on you, but you can still kind of manage. But then other times it's the belly where you can't even get your arms around it. You're just so consumed by it, right? That all you can do is be still and be present. But just recognizing that grief will show up in many of those different forms, in many of those different ways daily. But in every single case, it's an opportunity to lean into the person that you love, that soul that Rabbi talks about, to lean back into that connective piece of remembering and loving and engaging again.
My guests include the Reverend Ron Bell. He's senior pastor of Camphor Memorial United Methodist Church in St. Paul. Ted Bowman is an educator and consultant who specializes in grief, loss, and transition. And Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman is senior rabbi at Temple Israel in Minneapolis. And I want to go right to, I'm going to write to the phone lines. And let's start out with Amy in Plymouth. Amy?
Yeah, hi, thank you. I just wanted to share my story real quick. My husband passed away young at 37, end of January. And, you know, at first we were rallied by, with support by friends and family. And then the pandemic hit and it was like, poof, all of that support disappeared, understandably so.
Right.
But yeah, that, the pandemic made kind of that traditional gathering of family and friends coming over, sharing meals, just being together, that was gone, you know, completely. And I understand why, of course. You know, people's lives are upset. We're all quarantining at home. But in a way, it made things really difficult.
Right. It's understandable, but hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
And let's go to Marcy. And Marcy, you're in Duluth?
Yes, I am. Yeah. My husband, Paul, died of colon cancer on April 18th of 2020. He had 11 days in the hospital without any visitation, so we had a little bit of phone contact during that time, and then they transferred him into the hospice program at St. Luke's. So at least, you know, for his final days, I was able to be there and be with him in his room, and my daughter was able to come and visit him as well. A month later, I had my mom, who was in assisted living. She fell, and I had her in the emergency room, found out that she had a Pancoast tumor on her lung, and she died exactly 2 months after my husband passed away. Fortunately, I was able to engage hospice that final day of her life so that I could be with her in her assisted living facility. We have a memorial garden at Glen Avon Presbyterian Church here in Duluth, and so as soon as the thaw came, we were able to have a memorial garden service for my husband with 10 people in masks, and then we also had one for my mom a couple months later where my family from out of state could come. And it wasn't the same as having the normal traditions, but it certainly was better than not having any way to memorialize them at that time. The hardest part was our oldest daughter lives in the Canary Islands, and so when she finally got vaccinated in July of this year, she called me and said, "I'm coming to Minnesota, and we're going to have a celebration of Dad's life." And it was so important for her to do that since she couldn't be here for any of the other time,
sure.
You know, until then. She had seen him 6 months before he passed away. So she came, and we had a wonderful celebration of his life that was joyful and brought together friends and family from all over the area. And it was definitely something that was important for me and my two daughters.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm glad you were able to have the celebration. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it really was.
Let's go to Pat in Golden Valley, and Pat, what is your story?
I took care of my husband. He had brain tumors that were inoperable, and he was at home. He was in hospice for over a year. I took care of him for about a year and a half. He died in April. And hospice never came in. I was the hospice. I had worked in the funeral industry, so I had mentored to families for a couple decades after their losses in their lives. And so, you know it on paper, but when it's actually your own story, it's very different. I quit my job during the hospice with my husband, and just had to just take care of him, and we didn't know what to expect with these tumors. So I have asthma, so we kept to ourselves at home, but it felt like we were ghosts in a way, in a ghost world. There were so many unknowns, and there was fear, and we have a lot of friends, so they would leave meals on my doorstep, but it felt very alone with his illness and not knowing from day to day what was going to happen and how the end would be. And so it was, he did not want cremation. We had a funeral the first part of May, and some people could come, but it was limited with numbers of people. We've been doing as many things as we can to kind of, now that his daughter's back in town, and to kind of connect his family that wasn't close to us in vicinity. So all those things help.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a very difficult time in our world and in this house also.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And that's a powerful image, ghosts. So, Ron, Marcia, Ted, I'd like to get your reaction to, you know, whatever that you heard from Amy, Marie, or Pat. And I'll start with you, Ron.
Sure. You know, one of the things that's important to recognize is that we can heal on our own, but there's a difference between healing and wholeness. Wholeness requires community. It requires connection. And what you just heard our last caller talk about was missing that in a time of grief, missing community, and so not being whole. And so that's why it's important that when we think about these rituals and practices, part of what we think about is not just what rituals and practices we can do on our own, but what are the communal rituals and practices that are available to us in this time period, in this moment, as we think about grief. And I love what the rabbi talked about in terms of coming back after a year and gathering in community, mm-hmm. for wholeness,
yeah.
at the gravesite. Those pieces are critical for moving through grief. Yeah.
Marcia?
So one of the things that I heard in each of these stories is that people are at different stages of grief when we lose a loved one in normal times, right? Different family members grieve in different ways. But in this situation, it's so complicated because some people are very close. They're there. Others are not. And so the distinction between the different stages of grief and need are even wider. And I think it's important for everybody to slow it down a bit. I think we have to slow it down completely after these 22 months because we're so used to virtually moving at a very fast pace. But being connected to human beings and human emotion means that we have to slow it down and not experience frustration with others, but have an understanding that people might be in a very different place than you are around grief. And I think waiting and making sure everyone is together. It's like in the Torah when Miriam is healing from leprosy after she spoke out against her brother Moses, and the community waits for her to heal. And I think we need to wait for people and bring people together, but they're at different places and different stages.
And Ted?
Well, I would salute the callers who have come in because they were dealing with tough, tough stuff when what they wanted to happen could not happen, and they felt isolated sometimes and cut off from their community of support. But there were stories of them trying to be flexible and resilient to see what could be done. And I would just urge people to ask for help, to share some of what the needs might be, the desires might need be to help one move forward. A personal example, perhaps being a grief educator, it's an occupational hazard. I know lots about grief, but when it becomes personal, it becomes, it's quite different. And I was struggling 3 to 4 months after my wife died with the terms for me of being a widower, of being a solo man, of being single. And none of that seemed to fit, but it got exacerbated because I was also being quarantined some by the pandemic. And a friend helped me to reframe it. It's a bit about that pausing that Marcia was just talking about. And he said, Ted, you have never been single. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, a person who has a collection of friends in their lives is never single. They always are part of a collective. I'm part of your collective, and when you need some support, give me a call. And it just was a reframing. Nothing had changed, and yet it caused me to see things differently, that I was still part of a community, even if the community was not able to gather in the ways that I yearned for. I could take some initiative and be assertive to gather people one-on-one or outside or in safe places to get some of the support that I desired and need.
So let's go to Vina in St. Paul. Vina, what is your story?
Thank you. And thank you for this conversation. This conversation just made me think a little bit about the unique experiences of immigrants in grief during this time. So my family is from India. My parents immigrated here. And during the pandemic, my great uncle, who I'm very close to, died of COVID in India. And one of the things that had happened for us in the past is both of my maternal grandparents had died in India much earlier. And neither my mom was not able to get there for their deaths or their funeral. I wasn't able to either. And those were at times where we didn't have technology that would connect us. But the strange thing was that in some ways, both COVID and this time made my family think, let's do this online. And so the 13th day ceremony, which is very important to us, was done online. And I was able to participate. My cousin, who is the grandchild of my great uncle, was able to participate. And it was amazing to be a part of it, even though I was so far away and online. And what I also found, and this goes back to something that folks had said earlier about how grief comes up at other points in your life, but what was amazing is at the end, I found this kind of closure for my grandmother's death. My grandmother died about 10 years ago that I didn't even know that I needed, but by being at that ceremony, I got it. And so it was very, it was cathartic for me. And so I felt like a silver lining with COVID and also just the great benefits of technology.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and telling your story. That's wonderful. And now let's go to Andrea. And Andrea, you're in St. Paul also. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And your story?
I lost my husband. He was 52 when he died of cancer. This is many, many years ago, 23 years ago. But what happened to me was that my grief did not follow a normal course, or what they call a normal course. And it sort of turned on me. And for almost 20 years, I suffered from what the World Health Organization now calls prolonged grief disorder. It's more commonly known as complicated grief. And I thought Rabbi Zimmerman talked about that complicated reality, and Ted picked up on that. And it is true. In my personal experience, my grief rendered me silent, and it rendered me a hermit. I shut myself up in my house for, honestly, a decade, and I couldn't talk about it. I hardly could think about it. I had no self-awareness about my loss, and certainly no thought that I could ever take a step to do anything about it, which is so important, too. And because of that experience, I have thought for these past almost 2 years now about how people who have lost loved ones during the pandemic to COVID must be suffering.
Yeah.
And in my case, I couldn't have told my story. I couldn't have participated in a gathering and so on. And now Ted talked about that state of ambiguity, and we know that Pauline Boss, who is a well-known researcher at the U of M, talks about ambiguous loss. And I have thought for so long now that that kind of situation of loss could seems to me to be fertile ground for a situation in which someone's grief, someone can't heal normally, and may suffer from complicated and prolonged grief. And I kind of wondered if our guests could talk about that a little bit.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in. And let's turn to you, Ted, on her question about this prolonged grief.
Right. Well, all grief, as we said earlier, is prolonged, but yours was particularly severe, and it sounded like a very hard decade or two for you. What's important to use your story and the story of quarantining as a metaphor is that many people can experience a kind of abandonment, a kind of isolation, of being cut off, and yours, of course, was quite severe. And it's so important for us as a community to not abandon people who aren't ready to talk, aren't willing to talk, are pulling back for whatever reasons. A bereft father said, if you're keeping your distance from me, you are of no use to me. Come and sit with me on my mourning bench. And so if there's a way in which we as a community, if there's someone like Andrea or others who are not showing up in the same ways, that we don't force them to talk, but rather we continue to let them know that they're part of our circle of care and that we want to try to be there for them. And then, as happened with her, when people are ready to do the grieving as she did in the last 2 years, that's their timing. And so to not be critical of someone who didn't do it earlier or didn't do it well, but rather to embrace them when they're ready to move out of their cocoon or from the quarantine or to be ready to talk, yeah, to be there for them.
I think we have time for one more call. Let's go to Lindsay in St. Louis Park. Lindsay, your story?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I lost my mom about a year ago from COVID. And I think one of a really traumatic thing for me has just been comments from people that are really insensitive. I mean, COVID's so politicized that even just like listening to the news or something, people talking about masking and vaccinations and how they're so against it. And even people in my personal life who are not supporting mask mandates and the things that they have said have been really traumatic and just add another layer of trauma to losing someone from COVID, especially. So I'll keep my call brief, but that's my input.
No, well, thank you for calling in. And it's a good reminder to be, you know, for all of us to think about before we say certain things or get involved in certain kinds of conversations. And we're winding down. And so, Ron, you know, you just listening to this hour of conversation, what would you like to leave people with?
Sure. You know, we have these six core emotions, right? And grief is sort of a secondary emotion, a tertiary emotion. So it's made up of all of these core emotions, from anger to fear to sadness to disgust to even joy, right? It's made up of all those pieces. Well, the important thing to remember is that because it's got so many emotions in it, because it's so complicated, because it's so chaotic, because it's so jumbled, it means we have to make more space for it. We have to make space to grieve. In the same way we'd make space to have joy, we'd make space when we're angry, we'd make space when we're sad, that much more. We just have to make room, make space to allow ourselves to grieve, because it's an important part of who we are. It's an important part of what it means to be human.
In Marcia, in the last 40 seconds or so, again, your parting thought.
I think that I say in life as in death, many times people die the way they lived, but our grief is also connected to the relationship we had with loved ones in life. And sometimes we need to work out some of those conflicts in the grieving process. And so I want to just speak to the bravery of our callers who called in.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful first person and emotional elements. I am touched. I am touched to my very core. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And this has really been a very moving hour. And Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman is senior rabbi at Temple Israel in Minneapolis. The Reverend Ron Bell is senior pastor of Camphor Memorial United Methodist Church in St. Paul. And Ted Bowman is an educator and consultant who specializes in grief, loss, and transition. And this conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.